So I'm grateful to be here, and I thank Dee for her friendship and her example, and certainly for, I made a lot of talks in AA. I haven't been sober that long. By the way, happy birthday, 41, and 29, Wendy, who's working surreptitiously this evening. I like that. I like anybody who is creative enough to multitask like that. I'm sober since August the 25th of 1997, and I'm thankful and grateful for that. And I've thought about a whole bunch of stuff as I look in the Zoom room, and people are from literally all over the world. Australia just celebrated the 75th anniversary of AA in Australia. How fantastic is that? And on the board last year, as a member of the Archives, Trustees Archives Committee, I got to see quite a bit of that material. The correspondence that went back and forth when AA was forming up in Australia. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating, the growth of AA. I pay particularly close attention and have for quite a while, because I'm sure my sponsor or somebody who cared about me told me to pay attention to the format of AA meetings that I'm in, both in my own home group and groups that I have opportunity, a privilege of visiting. And I really appreciate that all 36 principles of Alcoholics Anonymous are mentioned in the format of the introduction of this meeting. And when I was new, somebody who'd been sober since the earth cooled said something about the steps prevent suicide, the traditions prevent homicide, and the concepts prevent genocide. I hope I remembered that correctly. But that has certainly reconciled with my own experience. And happy Thanksgiving, Canada. I saw my buddy Jan. She's the Eastern Canada Regional Trustee. She zoomed in last night at the 11th hour, and she said, "We're getting ready for Thanksgiving." And I thought, my God, Jan's slipped a cog, right? Thanksgiving's not till November. So I'm a nerd at heart. After she told me it was Canadian Thanksgiving, I spent the next hour and a half after the forum last night late looking at every piece of Wikipedia and learning about the history of Canadian Thanksgiving. Fascinating. Predates American Thanksgiving or US Thanksgiving by centuries. Amazing, amazing. So I'm here to talk about these service pieces, the colored cards. And I've made a lot of talks in AA. And I've certainly referenced these pieces of material, but I believe this is a first. I don't know if I've ever actually tried to weave a talk around the cards. So I'm a little bit, I don't want to say I'm nervous about it, but I'm a little keyed up about it because I have absolutely no idea where this might go. So ride with me and we'll see what happens. The anonymity card, because I think that's pretty straightforward, and I think its content is certainly, if anything, an amplification of the 11th tradition. Multiple versions of what we call down here the anonymity statement. In fact, the statement that I read at the opening of the sessions of the Southwest Regional Forum this year did not match verbatim what I found on the anonymity card that I just downloaded this afternoon from AA.org website. They're just a little bit different in scope. Now, that kind of leads me into a preface, which is to discuss that in all these instances, save one, they're certainly all these cards are service pieces. But they receive conference oversight. And the way they receive conference oversight is conference committees will look at kits and workbooks as a standing agenda item every year. And most, if not all, of these cards are materials that are part of kits and workbooks that we receive when we take various service responsibilities in Alcoholics Anonymous. So there is a form of conference oversight, delegate engagement And then sometimes we actually have members of the fellowship that send in potential conference agenda items, the blue cards specifically, that reference these pieces of service material, but they are not in and of themselves conference approved pieces of material. But they've normally always, for example, the safety card, the yellow card, has received a lot of attention about the last year. And I'm currently chairing the AWS board, so I've been aware of the scope and substance of those changes just by virtue of the position that I'm holding as a director on the AWS corporate board. But I want to talk about anonymity and the anonymity statement. And it really is a service piece that gives us the opportunity when we are presenting as AA members a program where we believe that there are members of the public sector in attendance, that we can make them well aware of AA's 11th tradition, that we would prefer, per our tradition, for our first and last names to not be publicly printed, that our faces and identification as members of Alcoholics Anonymous goes against our 11th tradition, and it asks that we not be identified in any media platform. The anonymity statement that I read at the openings of the Southwest Regional Forum was a little bit older, I believe, in that it listed out various forms of media. So I think we've made it a little simpler when we just say all media platforms. Until fairly recently, it wasn't unusual in this region to go to example to go to a conference or a roundup and have them read the anonymity statement, and it still said new technologies such as the internet. And I'm talking about in the last 5 years. Sometimes AA doesn't catch all of these different editorial versions of its material. And a lot of times the chairperson has never been introduced to the anonymity statement. So, you've got a pigeon who's got an opportunity to chair a meeting at state convention on Friday night. Perhaps they've never heard or seen or even know that there's such a thing as the white card or the anonymity card or the anonymity statement. It tells us that our 12th tradition reminds us that we place principles before personalities. Now, no one asked me, but I'm going to tell you that one of the most impactful lines in any one of the 12 traditions is where Bill says, "We feel it better to let our friends recommend us." And that's really what this anonymity statement is talking about. It's talking about the fact that I don't exist in a vacuum as a member of AA. I don't identify myself as such at the public level, but I'm, as an anonymous alcoholic, I should blend seamlessly into the world at large. I should expect no special credence, special acknowledgement. I should not ask for special discounts or subsidies or benefits because I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Do we all realize that 90% of the free world doesn't even think about any of that as a recovering from anything? They're those have two drinks at the end of the day and relax people. They're the wind down people. 90% of the world winds down. The people that are here in the Zoom room, we wind up. We wind up in places we should not be. We wind up with people we should not be with. And so that really is a specific condition as it relates to me as an alcoholic. And not necessarily a news flash, nobody's ever been given permission to speak for AA. Nobody. We've never given permission to anyone. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has never noted one person, or certainly a group of people, to be representative of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so the anonymity statement certainly it ensures that the fellowship can cling to the ideal that is established in the 11th and then supported in the 12 traditions, both short and long form, that that we don't need to be anybody in AA. Old David A. used to say, nobody wants to be the head sick. There's nobody running anything in Alcoholics Anonymous because there's nothing to run. We have services to support. We have a single purpose in which we are all either actively or somewhat actively engaged. Very simple scope, this thing called AA. And so we don't have a C-suite or a corporate hierarchy. You know, what happens is when you go to the bathroom at the wrong time in the group conscience, you come back and you've been elected to something, you moved down the food chain, not up the food chain, because you have more and more AA members that you have the opportunity to serve. So the highest I ever got, and didn't even know it at the time, if they had actually told me, I probably would have been, if it's possible, a little bit sicker than I already was. If they had said, the most important thing you can ever do in AA is claim membership in AA. Oh my gosh. Right? And when I became a greeter, and thank you, by the way, Hillary, for greeting in the meeting tonight. I believe that putting out signs on Thursday night was my first job. But greeter ran a close second, certainly in my first 30, 60 days of sobriety. And I might have been one of the worst greeters AA ever had. I mean, I was angry when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a child of entitlement. I felt like that people had not met my needs to the degree in which they were responsible. There was a lot of angst in me when I was new in AA. And so my sponsor felt like the best way to start chipping that away was to help me engage with my fellows. But he didn't really think I was 32 years old. I quote unquote was a businessman, or at least I was getting paid to be a businessman. And he really thought that I had the skill set that would allow me a cursory interaction with other human beings. He was wrong. Most of his reads were really spot on reads, but that particular read was wrong. And so when they placed me at the door of my home group, I greeted you. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, even people been sober for a while weren't intimidated, but they were a little taken aback. And so a good sponsor has good spies. And so the spies reported on me. I don't know what they call it in your part of the world. Over here, we call it dropping dime. And they dropped dime on me. And so I've never had fingers in my chest, but I've had a lot of arms around my shoulder. And one of the first times was that night, and that sponsor put his arm around my shoulder, and he preserved my dignity even when I didn't have any. And he carried me around the corner, and he said, Jimmy, the purpose of a greeter is so people feel welcome when they come to the AA meeting. And he actually showed me how to greet. He taught me how to greet. And I've been forever grateful, because we've built on that very tenuous foundation. I believe, you know, we've made a better and better AA member, more empathetic and understanding AA member. So anonymity. You know, it's an interesting deal. Most of you probably knew about this long before I did, but the board chair about 2 months ago, I was having a conversation with Linda Cheesham. She's our new board chair, about something completely unrelated. And she said, you know what I did the other day? I set up a Google alert for Alcoholics Anonymous. Never even thought about doing that. So I set up, and you can too, very simple to do, click, click. I set up a Google alert for Alcoholics Anonymous. And so every single day, Google emails me anytime the words Alcoholics Anonymous together appear in whatever they're, you know, spidering. I get an email that kind of recaps the links. And every single day, without fail, there are one or two of our members or potential members that offer up their anonymity at the public level. It's just every single day. Now, back when I was delegate, most of that, I was panel 59, so that's 2009 and 2010. Anonymity breaks is what we called them then. Anonymity breaks were handled by the area delegates. So if it happened in Northeast Texas, Dallas is where I'm sitting, which is the center of that service area. If it happened in my area, GSO was made aware of it. Then the public information assignment sent me a note, an email, or a letter, and told me what they knew about the magazine or the newspaper or whatever. To talk to me about the anonymity break. And then I had the opportunity, the privilege actually, of reaching out to the member to talk about what the substance of what's on the white card. I talked about the white card. And I talked about the 11th and the 12th traditions. I didn't say there's a rule about anything. I didn't say you must not do anything at all. I can tell you in every single exchange, and there weren't a lot, maybe 10, 15 during the 2 years that I served. In every single exchange, I learned something. I knew a little bit more when I came away from the conversation than I did going in. There was a little newspaper. My service area goes to the Arkansas, Louisiana line. So if you can look at the, if you looked at a picture of the state of Texas, that top right-hand quarter, Texas is four service areas. So Northeast is that top right-hand corner. So Texarkana sits up there in the very corner of my service area on the Arkansas line. And there was a little town just west of Texarkana, weekly newspaper, and I got an anonymity break. On the front page of that weekly newspaper, the little town about 6,000, 7,000 people, not only had this young woman identified herself by first and last name as an AA member, she told us in the content of the 4 or 5 column article that was written about her, oh, her picture was on there. She was in front of the AA group. They had her picture in front of the AA group, identified in the tagline underneath the picture. And in the 4 or 5 column article, it said that she had had a actually a religious awakening prior to coming to AA, and in one of the quotes inside the body of the article, she said, "Jesus Christ brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, bring you to Alcoholics Anonymous too." So there were multiple traditions that had been touched, and so I was sent via GSO of the contact information for this young woman. And so I prayed about it. I talked to my sponsor about it. And about a week later, I gave her a call. And by the time I got her on the phone, the first thing that she said after I said, "I'm Jimmy," and I gave her my full name, and I said, I'm serving as your delegate. Before I could say anything else, she said, "You're calling me to tell me I can't be GSR of the group anymore." And I said, "Oh, honey, no. No, not at all. I called you just because I hoped that perhaps you'd give me a little bit of your time and we could talk a little bit about AA and membership in AA." And she said, "The article, I had no idea. I got sober in Chicago, Illinois. My parents are both ill." She was probably 25, 26 years old. She said, "I've come back to my hometown to try to take care of them. And I started trying to find AA and I found the little group here." She said, "The editor of the newspaper, she and I went to high school together. I've known her all my life." And she said, "We just sat down over a cup of coffee. I had no idea she was going to write an article about anything." And I said, "I completely understand. I completely understand that." And she said, "Since then," she said, "since the newspaper came out," she said, "I've been hearing from all sorts of people. People that I don't know who've told me that I've harmed Alcoholics Anonymous." And I said, "Well, I don't really know to the extent at which I believe exactly what you've been hearing. I think what we try to do is the fellowship has generally accepted that these traditions are going to do much more to keep us together than they ever will pull us apart. And so I just want to talk to you a little bit about how they worked in my life and perhaps how they will work in yours. And I said, do you have experience, collective experience in your little home group? And she said, there are only about four or five of us. She had been sober 2 years. There are only about four or five of us. And she said, I've got the most time in the group. She said, all the old time sobriety is left. So through talking to the DCM up there and a couple other people after I had the conversation, I was actually given an address, not a phone number, but an address. A guy had been sober for about 45 years. And I wrote him a letter because he had been the one that had originally reported the anonymity break in the newspaper. And he called me. And after we started talking, he said, I realize what we've done wrong. Rather than stay and try to share our experience as we would know that elder statesmen would, we too quickly became bleeding deacons and we screamed and hollered and stormed out of the building, never to return. We've been going to meetings across the state line in Arkansas. And so the only reason I share with such tremendous detail about something that seems to be not necessarily directly connected to the card is not so much about the availability of a thing called the anonymity statement or the white card or a download from AA.org, is to say that the content and substance that's contained in the wording that's in the statement is vitally important for us to share as freely as possible with all of our fellow AA members. So we know that AA continues to be this faceless, nameless group of drunks, so it can be as attractive as it's always been to the alcoholic who seeks our help. I'm going to talk about safety. I believe that perhaps part of the yellow card, this is the yellow card, the safety card, and for those of you who may not be aware, if you get on AA.org, you will see that in the last 30 days, the safety card text has been amplified. There's additional text in the safety card that did not exist before. It's received a lot of work via the Trustees Public Information Committee and certainly the public information assignment at the General Service Office. And this dialogue certainly sourced within the fellowship. So one of the reasons, as I understand it, that the staff, and I'm talking big S staff, so the service assignment AA members, the Tradition 8 special workers at GSO, one of the reasons why they have been delegated a certain latitude in order to produce this service material is they're on the ground. They're receiving our telephone calls, our emails, our letters. They're actively listening and engaging with this broad spectrum that we know to be AA membership in the United States and Canada. They get together as a body, those it's 10 staff members, soon to be 11. Those 11 staff members get together every Wednesday and they talk about what's going on in their respective assignments. They talk about things that perhaps are on the worldwide wires about AA. And so that's really sometimes the genesis of this service material. So fortunate as a society, we went along for I don't know how many decades without any notable or reportable, let's say, crisis. And as far as I understand it, the true impetus for the safety card and the safety material was when the woman was murdered in California. And when the woman was murdered in California, we were brought in as party to civil litigation by her family, wrongful death. And that is just something that, when I say something that happened, tragic on all fronts. But we all know as AA members that we don't identify in one another based on how we've come to AA, what our personal situation might be when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Part of the safety card talks about falling in love on the AA campus, and that's really how that started. Boy met girl on AA campus, and within, I don't know, maybe they, 20 or 25 minutes, they were actually, in love. And so it just turned out very, very badly. And she ended up losing her life. So when that litigation was instituted, ultimately we prevailed. And when I say prevailed, that seems like an awkward thing to say in an AA meeting. We did not have to pay damages, monetary damages, because Alcoholics Anonymous, each AA group is in fact autonomous. And that's really what, in a way, we needed to prove. But we realized at that point that there were various groups all around the United States and Canada, and perhaps some, no offense, but perhaps some meeting houses across the US and Canada that perhaps didn't have a lot of leadership within the framework of their group. And so the safety material was born to help to be of service to those groups and members that may or may not have a resource within the membership of their respective group. And I know there are several here, not as a critical analysis. Just it is what it is. People believe there are no rules. There are no rules. And they mean no rules inside or outside of AA. And we don't exist in a vacuum. And we are living on the same planet. And what we sometimes take for granted as general rules of engagement. Sometimes people try to leave those when they walk in the door of an AA room. And just, a modicum of respect for their fellow AA member, perhaps it's not as prevalent as we would expect or assume. So the safety material's been born of that. I know that sometimes I've heard recently that AA members have tended to, for lack of a better term, bow up. And I don't know if that's too southern of a term, but it just basically means we get a little bit tight or abrasive because we feel like that the safety material is counseling AA about issues that are outside of AA. But yet those issues have certainly come inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so not giving so much rules or regulations about how to address behavior that impacts the common welfare. So shouldn't I always try to the best of my ability to bring it back into the literature? First tradition and fifth tradition. It's a tradition one issue and a tradition five issue. How many times have you been in AA rooms where they say the newcomer is the most important person in the room? I heard 6 months ago that there's a group that's leaving its door open all night long because they've got a newcomer guy that's sleeping in the group. That's not a good answer. It is not the answer to the problem to leave the group open so a new guy can have a place to sleep. I don't want new guy to be out in the rain any more than anybody else, but it's not the responsibility of the AA group to provide shelter to the new man. It's not the responsibility of the AA group to help me feel better about myself. Now, I know a lot of you probably went, he didn't just say that. It's not the responsibility of the AA group to help me feel better about myself. It's the responsibility of the AA group to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, your message, of course, makes me feel better about myself. But that's not necessarily by design. I'm not the target. We're the target. We all participate equally. We all benefit equally. We all have an equal degree of responsibility. Now, here's a little segue, but also talking about the safety card. can't speak to all parts of the US and Canada, but in my region, and certainly in my little part of the world, we have a lot of places that look just like clubs. They would be an Alano club if you have home groups that meet one or two times a week. And normally an Alano club have who knows how many meetings, but those are really X number of groups that, brown baggers are meeting and the lunch bunch is meeting and the bacon and eggs meeting and the midnight meeting and then this meeting and then that meeting. These are groups. I mean, they're a single group conscience that may be offering 30, 35, 40, largest count, 55 meetings a week. Lots of overhead for a single group. Lots and lots and lots of overhead for a single group. Especially in the last year and a half, when you think about the hybrid environment, we're just learning how to, a lot of places, we're just learning how to put all that together and make that work. And so if you have a conversation with perhaps, a GSR for that group, they might say, oh, that 7 a.m. meeting, it's wheels off. I mean, it's anything goes in there. And they're not necessarily so much talking about topic and substance. It could be that the mothers in the community with irreverent teenagers are leaving the irreverent teenagers at the door before the 7 a.m. meeting, and they're just coming in and causing all sorts of hell in the AA group in the morning. I don't know if they identify as alcoholic or not, but they're causing a ruckus. And so that AA member will say, of course, I only go at night. So I don't have anything to do with that 7 a.m. meeting. If it's my home group, I have ownership in that. If it's my home group, I have a sense of responsibility to the mission of my group, to the single purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous, not to police the area, not to establish rules and regulations, but to make sure to the best of my ability that that is, in fact, all time slots that we offer, whenever people are in the AA room, that it's a safe place for alcoholics to recover from the disease of alcoholism. And I had personally, on my own, a yin and a yang relationship with the safety material when it first came out. Because in my own personal experience in the two home groups that I've been a member of, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, we got about 150 members of my home group. We meet once a week on Wednesday night, and we've always been able to handle safety either through the group conscience or through a smaller set of leadership members of the AA group. So when member X, who's counting about 17 minutes of sobriety, keeps walking newcomer women to their car, we take care of that. And we don't offend member X initially. We just say, member X, here's the deal. We're just trying to make sure that everybody learns as much as they can about how to stay sober one day at a time. And the way that we do that most effectively is to make sure that everybody feels as safe when they leave the meeting as they did when they came, or safer. And we're not going to, it's not nothing about you. But we are people who are just beginning to understand how to integrate into life itself again. And you tend to be causing more nervousness than you do calmness. So you can walk men to their car, but we're not going to walk those women to their car anymore. We'll get some women to walk those women to the car. And he understands. And he might agree, and he may not agree. And we might have to have the conversation a second time, and perhaps the tone gets a little bit firmer. If we have to have the conversation a third time, it is entirely within the purview of the AA group to say, we'd like for you to take a couple of weeks to evaluate what you want to do. So we would ask that you not come back to the meeting till the 15th of October or the 31st of October. We're not banning him from AA. I've heard that a thousand times. Oh my God, they kicked him out of Alcoholics Anonymous. They've kicked her out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Impossible. Can't be done. Can't be done. But if you stay sober any length of time at all, we're going to have interactions with people who have problems other than alcoholism. We have people that absolutely need professional classes of therapy and whatever goes along with that. And if they, for whatever reason, absent themselves what they need to do in that area of their life in order to get better over there, they can have a lot of trouble and cause a lot of trouble in an AA group. And that needs to be addressed. Always preserving the dignity of the individual. Always preserving the dignity of the individual. And so I believe that the safety material, the safety card, and then there's an addendum. It's now 7 or 8 pages long. I wish I had the F number. I think I do. It's SMF209. You can download it from AA.org as safety material. And as service material, SMF209. It's called Safety in AA, Our Common Welfare. And it really goes into great detail about how this sharing from the fellowship, in other words, what's flowed through GSO about different places and times where potential AA members or new AA members or perhaps members with a little bit of time have felt like they were, perhaps they did not feel as safe as they would have expected to feel in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And certainly input regarding the text of any of these pieces of material is welcome. So whatever region you find yourself in, Southeast I know is in here, the Pacific's in here, there's Southwest people in here, Joe's an East Central guy, I know that already. Whatever region you find yourself in, you know that there's a staff member at GSO that handles correspondence for your region. And so if you're not in communication with your delegate or you're unsure about who the delegate happens to be at this particular point in time, and you see something in relation to the safety material, and here's why I say that in this particular venue. You people, you guys are plugged in. When I say plugged in, you're well familiar with the principles of AA or learning to be familiar with the principles of AA, and you're certainly learning as much as possible about these ancillary, these supporting pieces of material that we're providing in the fellowship. And it's important that if there's a statement that's being made in there that is outside of the parameters of what AA should express opinion on, then that really does need to be commented on. It needs to be part of what we're saying and what we're talking about. Self-support. I love to talk about money. I love, love, love to talk about money because there is amazing power in the spiritual nature of a dollar in an AA basket. Virtual, material, green money, Venmo, Bitcoin, ABC, XYZ, international currency, euros, the whole deal. At the bottom of the triangle, we really do have opportunity to see how impactful, there you go, thank you, Joe, how impactful the dollar can and will be. We make a little bit go a long, long way. So the self-support card is green. Of course, money is green. In most countries, money is green. And so that's how we got the green self-support card. Seventh tradition, fully self-supporting through the voluntary contributions of our own members. The long form is going to go on and talk about the trustees of the General Service Board being the custodians of all of our funds, and we are. We don't contribute to the General Service Office. We contribute to the General Service Board. And AAWS, the General Service Office, draws from that fund. And so basically, the board holds all the funds, literature, seven tradition, the whole deal. And then AAWS needs operating funds, and so it draws from those accounts. The seven tradition is more than simply paying for rent and other group expenses. Then it says it's both a privilege and a responsibility of individual groups and members to ensure that our organization, which would be AA, at every level remains forever self-supporting and free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose. We were as excited as we've ever been in 2020 because, for the first time in I don't know how many decades, our seven tradition contributions exceeded the net sales of literature. And what I can tell you about that as the chair of AAWS, treasurer last year, chair this year, is when we sit around the boardroom table and we talk about spending $50,000, if we talk about it in that its source is 50,000 $1 envelopes that came in via Seventh Tradition contributions, it's an entirely different conversation than we talk about $50,000 because we sold a few cases of books. It's just a completely different conversation. In order for the seventh concept, now I'm hopped over to concept seven, in order for the seventh concept to truly hold its metal and serve its purpose, the power of the purse, I believe it's vitally important as an AA member to try to the best of my ability to help AA at the lower levels become more and more self-supporting through seventh tradition contributions only. $10.2 million was contributed by the fellowship to the General Service Board last year, a record with hundreds of thousands of dollars higher than any other year ever. Literature sales, of course, had tanked. They dropped like a rock, right? We were selling between $1 million and $1.2 million in literature every month. In the month of April 2020, that went to $300,000. Dropped like a rock. I'm the Southwest Regional Trustee, and I'm the chair of AAWS, and we're recording this thing, and I want to tell you it's the best thing ever happened to AA. Best thing ever happened to Alcoholics Anonymous was when we had to pay our own way. The seventh concept was never stronger than in 2020. Because if the groups were not happy, believe me, we would know. Literature sales have to happen to everybody. AA can't say we will sell books to X and we won't sell books to Y. And we're not talking about the seven traditions specifically tonight, but just know that somewhere between, excuse me, 750,000 and $1,200,000 in literature revenue every year comes into AAWS from Hazelden. And the last time I checked, Hazelden is not AA. It's not even close. And I'm not saying that we don't sell to anybody because ultimately I believe that book gets in the hand of somebody who needs that book. I'm just talking about the impetus to be fully self-supporting, and that's a two-way street. I don't believe we have a revenue problem at any level. Home group, district, area, general service office. I don't see a revenue problem at all. I see expense issues. When have you ever served on a committee of any kind since you've been sober in AA where you said, we're going to spend X number of dollars and just waited for the money to come? Never happened. You always say, we estimate that our registrations will be such and such. Excuse me, and we budget accordingly. That's the way it always works in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the way it should work at the lowest levels. That's what the self-support card is talking to people like you and me about, is to be fully self-supporting through our own contributions. Now, I'm well aware that Bill talks to us in the 11th concept, I believe. I think it's concept 10 or 11, about book sales being akin to contributions in the basket. I don't mean to contradict any piece of AA literature and anything that was the belief of the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I will tell you that in this particular model, what was true in 1962 is not true in 2021. We no longer hold copyright to the first three editions of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not ours anymore. They're in the public domain. When did we ever think that the book Alcoholics Anonymous would achieve any sort of material value? Its value is entirely spiritual. Every piece of AA literature that we currently sell, we see between a 69 and 72% profit margin on every book. So what it cost us to produce and what your intergroup pays at its best rate, there's a 70% markup in that. It's just the way that it's always worked. So food for thought, dancing around, maybe selling a little bit of my side of the pancake. I apologize if I introduce some opinion in here. But talking about true self-support and how much power, and it is power, I know it's an ugly word in AA, how much power that gives to the fellowship. True self-support gives absolute ultimate authority and final responsibility without question to the fellowship. Right now, there is a revenue stream that has yet to be abused, but could potentially be abused. Because if we charge $15 for the book Alcoholics Anonymous, we charge $15 for the book Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not set by the conference, it's set by AWS. So we keep that in mind as we think about the seventh concept and how we make sure that that AA responds as a result of the needs and the wants of the fellowship. Last thing I'm going to talk about, oh, it's 602. I'm gonna kind of make this a little quick, but I want to, of course, talk about what I always called the blue card. Now, I might not be the most internet savvy guy, and I know, by the way, newaa.org, we hope by the end of the year, new website for GSO by the end of the year. I was on there for 30 minutes easy trying to find the blue card. Finally, I just searched for blue card and I found it. It's called the primary purpose card. It talks about the closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, gives a little intro. This is a closed meeting of AA in support of AA singleness purpose. Attendance at closed meetings is limited to persons who have a desire to stop drinking. If you think you have a problem with alcohol, you're welcome to attend this meeting. We ask that when discussing our problems, we confine our discussion to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. Now, this blue card, this primary purpose card, sourced in the conference, it's service material, but the permission to generate it sourced in the General Service Conference. That's why there's a note on the card about 1987 General Service Conference. 1987 conference felt like there was a need in the fellowship to share, not doesn't have to be used, but the blue card would share AA's collective experience about attendance at a closed AA meeting and then an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can really kind of boil this down based on my own experience. The open AA meeting ought to be more about Alcoholics Anonymous than the closed meeting ever thought about being. Because anybody can attend the open AA meeting. Anybody can attend the open AA meeting. So that husband, spouse, significant other, partner, child, mother, father, when they've tired of going up to the driveway and pulling in the garage and going inside and finding the drunk still alive, when they're tired of finding people like you and me still alive, when they're disappointed that we're not gone, They come to AA. And they don't come to AA so they can drag one of us out of the meeting so we can go home and knock on the door and get their spouse sober. They come to Alcoholics Anonymous because they want to know a little more about what in the world is going on in their house. The person like me who could not connect the dots. Now, I didn't have substances other than alcohol, but I really believed that all my problems were your fault. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, from the moment I began to hear your stories from behind the AA podium, I wasn't happy about it, but I knew I had what you had. And that was vitally important. You'd certainly have a different speaker. All those meetings were open. They were open AA meetings. My home group called it the showcase meeting because collectively we could represent the power of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never been a member of a home group that read the blue card, ever. I have no opinion about the blue card. I'm glad that we have it. But we've always had an open AA meeting. It's an open speaker meeting, my home group on Wednesday night. No better or worse, nobody polices the area, but we don't have people that aren't members of AA behind our podium. I don't know that anybody's ever asked to talk behind the podium as a member of the Al-Anon family groups, or a member of Narcotics Anonymous, or some other anonymous fellowship, or a friend or a supporter. But we have a lot of meeting before the meeting and a lot of meeting after the meeting. And I do think that that is part and parcel of the level of engagement, family disease, family recovery. I understand that and respect and appreciate that. And this was never meant to be exclusive in any way. Again, supportive of the fifth tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Doesn't have really a thing to do with the third tradition. That's an individual reconciliation. That's my own personal reconciliation. But I absolutely believe that if the home group cleaves to its purpose, the third tradition takes care of itself. But a lot of times I close my eyes for 5 minutes and I'm not real sure where I am. Am I in the barber shop? Am I at the animal rescue? Am I, where am I? And we have a collective responsibility for that. Within the framework of the autonomy of the group. That's not meant to be flippant or pessimistic or critical in any way. And everybody's going to have one-offs. We're always going to have times when, the guy that's on the court card, he just rambles on and on and on for 15 or 20 minutes. But there's one thing to be able to call your plant in the room when the guy that trailed off finally takes a breath and you say, thank you for sharing, and you come back into the room. But it's quite another for that to be repetitive behavior because this is no news to anybody. The people that we're trying to reach, they're dying of alcoholism. And it may just be today, Sunday, is the last day they're going to try to see if we have something that they can use. Just this day, what's my opportunity? And I think the blue card helps me figure that out. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. We ask all who participate in the open meeting to confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol, to their problems. Not my problems with the alcoholic, not my problems with the problems that are caused by alcoholism, but my problems with alcohol assumes a first person relationship with our disease. Now, I may not yet have identified myself as alcoholic. I may still say, I drank every day because it was all their fault. I'm not saying we need in any way to set up barriers or be exclusive, and I've certainly heard the rebuttals, and I try to listen as objectively as I can. The rebuttals are Bob Pearson told us in a conference report 25 years ago, quit being so strict, quit putting all these restrictions up. I don't disagree with that. seems to me that the first 40 or 50 years of AA, we seemed to go along and get along pretty good. I'm not saying the streets were paved with gold. Nobody really to speak of ever studied the book back then, right? We didn't have book studies or any of that kind of stuff that we've got today. But we seem to be pretty even keel about what was the purpose of the AA group. And the purpose of the AA group was not like Hyde Park Corner. It wasn't so people could just stand up for 5 minutes and say whatever it was that they wanted to say. We were offering a safe place, an opportunity for people of our kind to recover. Bill wanted to give AA membership to Lois, and there might have been a period of time where Lois expected to be a member of AA. I don't know that for sure. I'm no historian. There's nothing written down that I've ever seen, but I'm going to tell you, she thought she needed to get rewarded for putting up with his sorry butt for all those years. And he said, "We can't do that. We can't do it." And the main reason we can't do it is, even though Lois Wilson was as closely tethered to alcoholism as anybody has ever been, she did not suffer from our disease. And because she did not suffer from our disease, she could not communicate with one of our kind, not in the way that really carried the depth and weight that was necessary for a guy like me to recover from alcoholism. She could tell about the family in a way that I can't tell. She could help the families of alcoholics recover in a way in which I don't have that skill set. But me as the drunk in a primary sense, in a primary role, she never could get there. She could imagine what it felt like, but she couldn't actually feel it. So the blue card just helps us with that. What are the parameters for that? Now, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm not a guy who supports this screaming and hollering, "Oh my God, it's closed AA meeting. What are you doing in here?" Or a guy, who we don't know, just goes off the rails and talks about something that doesn't have anything to do with anything. I still say that we try the best of our ability always to preserve the dignity of the individual, always. But certainly within the framework of the group, we try to have chair people who know enough about how to help us come back into where we need to be. So when you call on me and I'm way out in the weeds, you have plants in the room. It helps with the blue card, especially if the meeting is an open AA meeting. And we have somebody, doesn't necessarily have to be somebody that's sober since the earth cooled. They could be fairly new, but they know about the purpose of the meeting and the purpose of the group, and they help us get there. I know it sounds really simple when we sit here friend to friend and we just kind of talk about it, right? But there are some otherworldly events that I believe once we let that cat out of the bag, it's really, really hard to get back on point. And the point is not so much about just the health and well-being of AA as we know it. It is the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. What will AA look like tomorrow? What will we be presenting for the alcoholic, as Burn Smith would say, is not born yet. We hope we're here and we stay here. So I didn't know I talked for 45 minutes. I was going to make apologies, but I guess I did all right. So thank you all for listening to me. Thanks.
The one thing I miss is the sound of the clapping, and then the sound of us collectively talking in our prayers, and maybe not the chanting, but I'm just saying, yeah, I see some accessibility hands going up, and I at least we're learning how to do that during the COVID times and in the screens. So Jimmy, thank you so much. I love the way you can tell stories and bring this together and wrap it together for everybody and simple-minded like me. I really appreciate that. So, and I had some things that I thought I should say or that I thought were important to add, but apparently they're not that important because my higher power has removed those thoughts. It must mean I was listening instead of thinking what I was going to say. So this is good. So anyway, in the meantime, I'm stalling for you people to use those little chicken pecking fingers for you to send me some questions. I've got a few. I'm going to get started. But so please send your questions for Jimmy, because he has allotted the time to be with us. We won't kidnap him all night, but we'll kidnap him for the next 15 minutes at least. So it looks like I heard a strong chair or a strong script from you. And to have both would be great, you know, if we have somebody chairing our meeting. So with that, the first questions that came in were, we have an individual asking, can an individual be banned by a group due to one member having a restraint order against the individual? That's an interesting question I've not heard yet before. Yeah. Maybe like a domestic violence kind of thing or something. I don't know, you know.
You know, I think that there, I would hope that there were ways for the AA room to be a place of neutrality. Now, I understand that might sound like pie in the sky stuff and not be possible. But, you know, if both people were sponsored, and I don't think I mentioned the word sponsor. I should have mentioned it 1,000 times in the talk tonight. But if both people were sponsored, it seems to me that you know, the best situation for both of those members would flush out, because you'd have people that were looking at it objectively, and that's really the deal. I think the danger arises because the AA group would begin to take sides, not so much about the restraining order piece, but the AA group will take sides. And if the AA group begins to take her side or his side, or her side and her side, or his side and his side, whatever the parties happen to be, then of course we've lost the unity of the group. So I think whatever we need to do in order to make sure that the unity of the group is preserved, right? And here's the deal. If the lady, let's just say it's a man and a woman, a old school. If the lady needs to have the group, so to speak, if the lady needs to have the group, then men in the group should mobilize and make sure he has meetings and fellowship. It doesn't have to be done whatever the group is offering. And my gosh, now we've got Zoom. We could have, you know, we could do it anytime we wanted and not even have a physical location. We minister to that AA member's needs, right? We think outside the meeting box, and we create what we need in order for both those people to recover. Yeah.
I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Jimmy. I want to apologize. You know, I wasn't going to do this until we got done, but if I seem distracted, my dog had a seizure in the middle of the beginning of your talk. So if I moved away from the conversation and I was not present on screen, that's very disrespectful of a chair, and I wouldn't do that intentionally. So I just want to apologize, Jimmy. So, because you know how you put people in front of your screen to talk to, and usually I'm pretty interactive, like Biddy on the screen. So if I walked away, I do apologize, and I don't mean to make it about me. So is having a 501(c) for your group going against Seventh Tradition, somebody asked? 501(c) is what they're asking.
No,
and for your group going against Seventh Tradition.
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit more difficult to obtain that nonprofit certification than it used to be, but I think it's important for tax purposes. I mean, again, we exist in the real world, and there are groups that substantial amounts of money are going in and out, you know, of the group every year. You know, we've got a group here in Dallas. I'm about to talk at their anniversary, and their rent alone is about $6,000 a month, just the rent. And it's a group, not a club, right? So we're talking about, you know, $200,000 or $300,000 a year going in and out of that place. So certainly they need to have some sort of IRS status that proves, right, that their mission is nonprofit. So I can't think of any conflict with the Seventh Tradition, considering also obviously that all the corporations that you and I own, all three of them, right? General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous Inc., the AA World Services Inc., AA Grapevine Inc. are all 501(c)(3) corporations. So, yeah.
And if any of that confuses you, what he just said, for those of you that are like, what do we own? What? I'm just saying, you can come back here as an alternate DCM. We are holding on this platform at this address and so forth, but I personally am hosting a 13-week workshop for traditions and concepts, and we can talk more about that, or a service manual study we can send you recordings to. So again, if you are lost with what he just said about that, because I know if I was new, I would be like, what do you mean? That debate everybody gets into, is it a corporation or, it's okay. No, you're fine. And then speaking of that, because you use the word general service board versus general service office, and I love that. Somebody had asked, so I'm going to turn this comment into a question so that we can kind of turn it around for action for them on their part. It says, I printed out the F42 self-support card from the AA.org website. The second page, some things to think about, on the first line talks about 43.7% of our groups contribute to the general service office. I just wanted to point out that it should probably say contribute to the general service board. So again, what would you advise people that find, you mentioned it a little bit in the talk, what would you advise the people to do to take action if they find something that's maybe a misprint or something that needs to be addressed? What would you advise that they do, Jimmy, how they would handle that?
You know, that would be something that you would, again, either, I say communicate directly with GSO with a copy to your delegate if you know your delegate, just so the delegate's aware. But I'm going to tell you, I hate to tell you that I didn't notice that, and I want to say thank you to whomever pointed that out. I have the opportunity. I have a weekly 90-minute meeting with the general manager, and because tomorrow is a holiday for them, it's Columbus Day. It'll be Thursday this week, and believe me, this card's changing because we do not contribute to the general service office.
I love it. And I thought you would. So yes, I just know it's nice to be able to encourage people to take that action and know that they can, to understand, like you've mentioned, the power of the purse, to understand the power of the fellowship.
And you know, and I don't want to spend too much time. I really don't want to spend too much time on it. And I know that there are a lot of people, and this is, you're not, you know, you haven't studied this part yet, but so many times in meetings, in service meetings, you'll hear people even, they'll reference GSO instead of the conference. And those are just such distinct. Now, GSO certainly has a presence, but GSO is an office. It's a vitally important part of what we're doing, but it's an office. And it's not healthy for them or us to infer that they have responsibility or authority that they do not have.
That's beautiful. Hey, listen, I'm just happy if we stop calling them, in my neck of the woods, the four parts. We contribute to those four parts, whatever those four parts are. Anyway, so yeah, moving on from there, we got another question from, let's see. And for anonymity's sake, I didn't mention the name, but afterward, I'll give credit to where credit is due for those two people sticking around. So let's see here. We have a gentleman asking, thank you for the alert of additional language to the yellow card, SMF 209 P10. How it works, has it been changed? I've been hearing different versions being read at my home group. I haven't missed this, have I? I know the preamble has. Somebody's asking how it works hasn't been changed. Somebody's being a wise guy in regards to the comments at their home group. Maybe some of that chanting and so forth goes on at that group.
Yeah, no changes to any of the text of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and this year's conference. So the next edition of the book will be, now granted, the plain language book is at its beginning of development, right? But the book Alcoholics Anonymous is unchanged. No changes.
No. I was going to say, you don't want to open that can of worms, do you, and get that question answered. Is it a translation or is it going in front of the conference? I'm just joking. We'll just stop there.
I'll get back to the business at hand, but I'll tell you to the extent that is not a translation as in the normal sense of the word and would not be treated as such at all. Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Good, good. That's all that's important to know. Yeah. Okay. So question, referring to Article 3 of the current conference charter, does the statement no changes to the steps may be made without the consent refer to the 12 steps and how it works as displayed in our wall hangings or the 12 steps as they exist within the first 164 pages? Thank you.
Well, the wall shade, the window shade, is the extraction of that part of the fifth chapter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, they would, you know, they mirror one another. So they would mirror one another. Am I answering the question? Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, just so that the person understands that, yes. And if they're being cheeky and asking, like, they're going to be differently one addressed and one not, no, we're not going to change just one and not the other, right? I mean, it's not like we're talking about a pamphlet. Yeah.
Right.
I don't have, so for those of you that asked, in the chat, there was information put before we close here. There's information, I'm going to double check my questions, but there was information for all of the cards we discussed put in there for the links. Or like Jimmy said, I too had trouble finding it. It was so funny. I just type in AA blue card, AA yellow card, et cetera, et cetera. So, but with that, I want to say thank you again as I scroll to make sure I didn't miss any questions. And for the sake of time, with 4 minutes left, if I have a quick one other than that, then we might just go ahead and close. I know you've had a long day.
Okay. Yeah, and you know what? And I'll
last one. Okay.
D, sidebar deal, but as we, you know, we have a board meeting at the end of October, nothing will really be updated. Mm-hmm. But after January, at the end of January, we may know a little bit about whether or not we've even selected the vendor for plain language. And so I'll feed that. I'm not trying to get in anybody else's business.
No, right? I know what you mean.
But yeah. I'll feed that information through to you. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think it's important for all the fellowship to know. Yeah,
absolutely. Because it just wasn't as clear. I mean, and even from our delegate, I know I spoke with our delegate, so it wasn't that I'm going around anybody. I spoke to a few delegates. Okay. So with that said, there is two other questions real quick, and that's it. I won't take any more again. This is respect out of time. Somebody did ask the first question that I was confused by. They asked, what is the Y card? I thought they were making fun of an accent or something, and we were referring to the white card with anonymity, but they said, what is the Y card?
Y-W-I-D-E?
They're spelling it W-H-Y.
The Y card.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Y card is. Would somebody be willing to say?
After we get done recording and close it out, they can elaborate if they want to stick around. Yeah, I know who it is. Perfect.
Okay.
And then the last one is, you guys that are asking these other questions directly for Jimmy, stick around. And if he doesn't have to go, then he can choose. But otherwise, we're going to stick to the format here. Last question was, how is the Grapevine's new podcast handling anonymity?
The last thing I heard, which was actually this weekend, because they had a Grapevine presentation at the forum, was that the Conference Committee on Public Information chair, no, that's AAWS podcast, excuse me. I don't know what discussions have been had in Grapevine regarding that. I would think that the person's only giving first name, last initial as part of the recording. That I can't imagine that they wouldn't be. And they'll be posted on the YouTube channel, the Grapevine YouTube channel. So I don't know that that's a, there won't be any face associated with it, certainly. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, I love the story you tell about, you know, your experience with that whole anonymity, but story. But anyway, okay, so we're going to go ahead and close. And I want to thank you again, Jimmy, really from the bottom of my heart for you're one of those people that is, don't do as I say, do as I do.